there is no way that someone that really genuinely loved themselves could possibly treat themselves and people that they claimed that they loved that way. Like, there's just a huge discrepancy. But it's like, you really can't fully, or I know from my experience, like, I couldn't fully love anyone in my life if I didn't love myself first. And I didn't know that at the time, but it was very apparent.
Welcome to the Hey Presley podcast, where we give you the practical tools and inspiring conversations to pursue a higher quality of life. Through a variety of topics, we intend to show you that an exceptional life is available to anyone. I'm your host, Presley Hirsch, and let's dive in. Hi, friends, and welcome back to the Hey Presley podcast. Today, I'm sitting down with spin instructor, health guru, habits expert, founder of Silver Lining Wellness, and host of the Positively Real podcast, Brittany King. I met Brittany through a mutual friend some time ago, and then I had the pleasure of being on her podcast last year. And Brittany just has the most positive, contagious energy, and you're going to really feel that come through, like, almost immediately into our conversation. And although Brittany has always been really naturally optimistic, she has learned through her own personal trials and hardships, along with coaching others in her wellness practice, how to actually maintain a positive outlook and tactically set yourself up for success and fulfillment in a life that's constantly pulling you in different directions. So today we talk about cultivating a growth mindset and what that means, addressing common roadblocks along the way to self-love, the importance of morning routines and how that actually starts the night before, and really evaluating how your actions are aligned with how you feel about yourself. Brittany gets pretty vulnerable and really just real and authentic about some of her darker times that led her to where she is today. And I'm so grateful that she used this space for that, because I think that a lot of you are really going to find it relatable and hear some of yourself in her story. So if you're enjoying this episode or getting a lot out of it, while you're listening, please take just a moment, screenshot it, post it on your Instagram story, and make sure you tag me at Hey Presley. You can tag Brittany too. It's at Brittany, B-R-I-T-T-N-Y. King_. So we see it. We would love to thank you for listening. And you sharing this podcast is, it's free, it's quick, and it really helps me continue to get the message out in the world. So I really appreciate it so much. With that said, please enjoy my conversation with Brittany King. Brittany, thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to have you. This is fun. I got to go on your show and now you get to come on mine.
It's an honor. When I got that little guest invite in my inbox, I was so excited. I was like, yes, I've made it. I'm on Presley's podcast.
I am so excited to have you. And it's been on my radar for a while, both just since I've known you, since I came on your show. But then, like I told you, I listened to one of your episodes recently that I just got so much goodness out of. So I was really excited to bring you on.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Before we get into all the nitty gritty, the tactical stuff, I want to start with kind of establishing your credibility a little bit, sharing some of your story. And I won't speak for you, but I know you well enough to know that you're not just this like happy go lucky, life has always been great person, even though it seems that way. I know that you've had your own struggles and obstacles that you've overcome to get you to this place that you can now guide and coach others. So can you explain, you know, just a little bit about your background and what led you to lifestyle and wellness coaching?
Yeah. So it's a common misconception about me. I have heard that multiple times, which is kind of a part of my story in the first place. I was labeled a happy person since I can remember. And so I wore that title. So anytime that there would be some sort of bad feeling or negativity or something that was going on, I didn't know what to do with it because I was like, no, I'm this way. Like, how could I feel sadness? So I would just stuff it down and I would avoid it. And I got really good at avoidance. And I would say, probably in my early 20s is when it started to really started to take shape, that avoidance, because the truth is when you avoid something, it doesn't really go anywhere, or at least my experience, it's stored somewhere within my body and my mind. And I started noticing a pretty interesting pattern of self-sabotage. Of course, when I was in it, I had no idea that I was self-sabotaging. I just thought that this is just how I am. But of course, looking back, I was in a very negative cycle of self-sabotage. But definitely in my early 20s is when those behaviors started to really show up in my life. And I noticed that any time that I was happy, like actually genuinely happy, not this like facade that I had worn for so long, I would guess I would call it a mask. Anytime I was in that place of happiness, I would do something to sabotage it, whether it was a relationship or sabotage my body, the food choices that I was making, just in general, I would find a way to mess it up. Like almost clockwork. And that went on for quite some time. And I just was kind of starting to accept that about myself, that I was like just this person that like would do these things. But deep down, I knew that wasn't me. And I was really trying to figure it out. And I felt very lost. And I felt like a fraud because people would see me in a certain way and they would tell me what they would see and how they felt about me. And I just was like, oh my God, I have everybody fooled. I literally have everybody fooled because I have no idea what they're talking about. I do not view myself in that way. And I found that to be it was hard for me for a while because I would just smile and be like, okay. And then I would go home and just treat myself so poorly, like the food choices that I was making, the late night partying. And I just thought that's what the normal thing to do was just like party and black out and then blame my poor choices on the partying and the blacking out. And looking back, it was self-sabotaging behavior, especially because of the choices that I made. And you would think after one or two times I would start to change it because I noticed it, but I didn't. I continued down that path. And I remember waking up one day and it was that moment of, holy shit, you're going to be alone. Like you're going to lose every person in your life if you continue to treat yourself and others like this. And, you know, I wish it was as easy as having that aha moment. And everything. And it was like, okay, everything's
right.
But it was definitely, I think, the awareness that I needed to start breaking the cycle because I was just in a vicious cycle. I was just in the habit of being this person that wasn't me. Like I knew that it wasn't me, yet yeah. I was still doing it because I didn't love myself. Like there is no way that someone that really genuinely loved themselves could possibly treat themselves and people that they claimed that they loved that way. Like there's just a huge discrepancy, but it's like you really can't fully, or I know from my experience, like I couldn't fully love anyone in my life if I didn't love myself first. And I didn't know that at the time, but it was very apparent.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And there's a lot of mindfulness there, a lot of self-awareness, like these actions don't align with self-love and this is a vicious cycle and things that are all so much easier to recognize, you know, looking back. What were kind of the first steps, you know, because you said you just thought these things were normal and that you were sabotaging like clockwork. What were the first steps to really start realizing those things? Like when did you start cultivating self-awareness or looking for help to identify that those were patterns that you were doing?
So that's a great question. And I mean, I really have Lululemon to thank for a lot of things in my life. It was definitely the catalyst into personal development and yoga. I mean, really yoga. Actually, my sister, I have to thank for that. But then it continued on. But Lulu really introduced me to personal development. And I had been to Landmark and I didn't think I was going to get anything out of it, but I definitely did. And I remember one of the things that really stuck with me was just self-awareness and just really taking a step back and owning like, the choices that I've made and the stories that I've told myself. And once I learned that everything is a racket, I was like, whoa, you mean you're just telling me that I've just been telling myself this story about my behavior for this long and I'm running a racket and this is the trade-off. Like it was just all these things were really connecting for me. And I remember in like probably one of my lowest points that I was the only person to blame. Like I just, you know, I can, it's like weird. I can just think back to when I was just so low and there was no one to blame. And for the long time, I would always blame someone else. Mm-hmm. I would blame my dad for my daddy issues. Like, you know, like it was so easy. And I learned that that is not like not his fault at all. And I owned the choices that I was making. And sure, there's been things in my life that I have seen relationships, and my parents were divorced at a really, when I was really young. So I viewed relationships in a very toxic way. Like I was surrounded by fighting and it was very volatile, and I came from a very loving home. But as far as what I viewed relationships as was just this constant cycle of like fighting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would blame that and I would like constantly be pointing fingers. And then once I started to look at the common denominator, which was me, I really had to start owning it. And that was hard for me. I was very aware, but yoga really helped me with that because it allowed me to slow down, to actually take a little peek inside and be like, okay, you got to like figure this out or else you're just going to be like this for the rest of your life. And it was interesting because the cycle broke before with awareness, like the self-awareness is what changed everything.
Yeah.
I was like, I was almost like disgusted with myself. Like I really was truly, if I pulled myself out of it and was watching everything unfold, I was like, who are you? Like, this is not who you are. So I was really that moment of disgust, like that really did it. But when I started dating Brian and it like completely was just in a totally different headspace, I noticed some of those thoughts coming back in. And I was like, ooh, like, oh, like this is, I could almost catch it now because yeah. I knew the pattern was there. And it was really, really cool to be able to do that. And then also not let that pattern come back in, to actually stop it and be like, well, that's my old story. That's not my story anymore. And really what it came down to is like, I owned it. I owned everything that I've done and the parts that I felt shameful for or embarrassed that I would never want to speak of, just talking about it and not feeling ashamed and just letting the story be the story and not determine who I actually am. Like that was really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's so powerful to recognize. I mean, I remember early in my personal growth journey and when I first started getting into self-development, recognizing that it is just a story that you're telling yourself and you actually can change the way that you think and the way that you are and the way that people perceive you and the way that you perceive yourself. And it's both an exciting and terrifying realization mm-hmm. because then it's like, wow, everything is up for grabs. Like nothing has to be the way that I know it now. And that's going to require a lot of work and like looking at yourself and getting in touch with that shame. And it's uncomfortable and it's gross, but it's also mm-hmm. exciting and invigorating mm-hmm. at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Like I love looking back and it's just, I can't even believe like where I've come from. Like really, like I went to Donnie's Love Yourself retreat. And it was so great. And it was so crazy because I don't think I actually, like, I'm like, oh, like I've come so far and I know that I have. But there was one moment at the end of the retreat where we were doing a meditation and I just like started crying and I hadn't cried all weekend. I was like, ooh, like I'm feeling good. And I started crying and it was like, I actually felt proud of myself because the stuff that we had been working on, like it didn't even impact me in the way that like I had things to work through. Like, of course I always am working on myself and I want to grow and evolve, but that part of me is so just a story in my past that I was just like proud. I was like, damn girl, like you did that. You're not just talking about it. Like you're being about it. And it was a really cool moment for me because I actually allowed myself to be proud.
That's amazing. And let's quantify or if you could, what is self-love? Like, how do you define that? And I'm curious, this is like three questions in one, if you think it's different for men than women.
Yeah. Well, great question. I mean, It's not, but how you approach it, like mm-hmm. self-love. I mean, it really comes down to self-esteem. It's like how we talk about ourselves, how we talk to ourselves. But really self-love is, it's self-acceptance. It's just accepting who you are and where you've been. And not to say like, I'm not going anywhere. Like this is just it. It's just being able to honor where you're at on whatever part of this journey called life that we're on, and knowing that you have the power to, if you don't like where you're at, it's like being able to accept yourself without judgment is really what it comes down to. And I think that ties into a little bit of mindfulness and meditation. It's being able to observe your thoughts and observe who you are without judging yourself. And that's really hard.
Yeah, that's right? Like really hard.
We are our toughest critics, because if you have a friend that comes to you and it's like, oh, like I made all these mistakes, I messed up, like I can't believe I did that. Like as a friend, most likely you're going to be like, it's okay. You're human. You're going to be okay. We're going to get through this. But if it's you, it's like, you are the worst human being. I can't believe, you know, it's like, we're so hard on ourselves. And I think self-love is very much available to men. I just think self-love, it sounds fluffy. It is fluffy.
Sure.
But you know, it's all related to self-discovery and understanding ourselves and respecting ourselves and trusting ourselves and knowing ourselves. Like, I mean, through this process, I've actually gotten to know myself. Like, I really didn't know who I was. I was constantly trying to fit in. And when I was younger, my survival mode was I'm just so adaptable. And that was how I survived. Was just blending in, being a chameleon, I am very good at it. It's very obvious in my spin classes. Like I can literally adapt to any type of music, probably other than country. Sorry if you like country, but really, unless it's Shania Twain, because I can sing a whole Shania Twain song. But anyway, I just can blend in, and it's definitely a really good survival skill. But then when it comes to knowing myself, it leaves me feeling a little bit lost. And I, through my self-love journey, I would say that I've gone to know myself and just accept it. And it's been really nice. I'm like, hey, you're not so bad after all.
That's so funny. Well, and you make a really good point about adaptability, you know, being kind of a hurdle that you've had to go through, but also you cultivated that skill for a reason. It obviously really helped you. I was listening to something recently. I don't remember where it was, but it was, you know, someone kind of challenging the thought of like, you've always done it this way. How is that working out for you? You know, it's like people sometimes will kind of like use that as an armor, like I'm just adaptable. And it's like, right. How's that working out for, like, how happy and fulfilled are you? Like you've gone totally. This far. Like, how is that serving you?
And, oh my God.
And it's interesting because in a way it has, right? Like it helped you get through a really hard period in your life, but how is it serving you now? I think is really interesting. One mm-hmm. of the things that I read on your website about your coaching program is the discovery process, and how that's really mm-hmm. early on when you start working with someone is getting clear about what is holding you back. What are your roadblocks? So what are some of the common ones? I know everybody's really different, but what's like a theme that you see on a regular basis of things that are holding people back from starting or getting really into this process of self-love or fulfillment?
That's a great question. I mean, two things. I love that question of like, well, how's that working out for you? I know that whole like, well, this is just how I am. Like, that's one of my like, oh, like one of those words that I'm just like, no, like take that phrase out. Like language is so powerful. And I used to wear that all the time. Like I was like, oh, this is just how I am. Like, this is just me. Like, da, 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 da. Like, and it's like, no, like why? So I love that you brought that up. And then as far as the discovery process goes, I mean, we're all a lot more alike than we think. Mm-hmm. We're all very much connected. And the roadblocks that I've noticed, and of course, the clients that I attract are the clients that like I've been there. Like it's so fascinating how it's a very specific person, and I'm just like listening to them, and I'm like, wow. It's not that I'm like 50 steps ahead of them. I'm just like two or three. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, I'm your guide. I was there not that long ago, and this is what worked for me. And if this doesn't work for you, we're going to figure out what works for you together. Like, becomes a collaboration. And really, the number one thing is putting other needs before own. Like, just like, that's a big roadblock, is like, oh, like if I take care of myself, then I'm selfish. Like, sure. I have to take care of, I'm the fixer. I got to take care of everyone in my life first, and then maybe focus on myself if there's time. And then, I mean, it's really that I'm not good enough. It's always that freaking statement and perfectionism. And I'm like, first of all, what is perfect? Could we even define it? It's like, and no, like it's different to everybody. And then that I'm not good enough. It's like, well, what are we going off of what enough is?
Yeah.
There's nothing. It's like, it could be, I'm not blank enough. Like, that is such a, like, just fill in the blank. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not pretty enough. I don't have enough resources. I don't have enough school. I mean, the list goes on. And it's like, if you really dive into it, it's like, well, what is enough?
Yeah.
Really.
I think this ties back really well to something that you said earlier that I wanted to come back to, which is this concept that language is really powerful, and the way that you say things is really important. I think that's a concept that is becoming more popularized, but a lot of people still maybe haven't been exposed to it. So as you're diving into these mantras, essentially, that people are telling themselves, that they're telling themselves as truth, is I'm not blank enough, you know, fill in the blank. How does that relate to language being really important? Like, how do you start going about changing the way that somebody talks to themselves in that way?
So that's a great, great question. So I can't follow my clients everywhere. But in our sessions, if I hear them say something like, and they don't even know they're doing it, like they'll say, I can't. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, we're taking can't out of your vocabulary. And then they'll start to hear my voice. Like, I've anchored myself in their mind.
Yeah.
And they'll hear me being like, rephrase that. And, we just start there. Like, in our first session, like, we have 90 minutes together, and that's after the discovery, because during the discovery, I want to make sure I can help. I don't want to waste anyone's time. It's not about having the most amount of clients. Like, that's not my goal. I want to make sure we're a good fit to work together. And I'm not for everyone. And I'm okay with that. Of course, in the beginning, I'm like, I want to help everybody, but that's just not realistic. And that also comes back to that need of fitting in, of just being like, oh yes, I can do this. So after the discovery, and I can always tell within 5 minutes of talking to someone, I'm like, oh, and I have to be cool, because I, as you can tell, I get very excited. And I have to play my cool until the end of the call. But then after this discovery, we dive into a deep dive. And that's 90 minutes together. And I can just hear the language that they're speaking. And I'm not going to call them out right away. We're just getting to know each other. But by the end, I start sharing the things that I've noticed about the words that they're saying. Mm-hmm. And I just even that, I'm like, oh my God, I didn't realize I do that. One of the biggest things that I noticed, oh, I'm so dumb. Like, and I'm just like, I know that you're joking, but like, do you realize if you say that over and over again, you're enforcing that belief on yourself?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so automatic. It's so habitual to just say these negative things about ourselves. And you can tie, like, I was just kidding. But your subconscious doesn't know that. It thinks that it's your reality. It's your truth, right? Like, our subconscious doesn't know the difference between a desire and the reality and what's actually going on. So when we speak negatively to ourselves, it definitely reinforces those negative thoughts and beliefs that we have.
What's a language that you've had to change for yourself in your personal growth journey? What's something that you've had to restructure the way that you say it or the way that you think about it to yourself?
Definitely that I'm not smart enough. That's been my story forever. And I know exactly why. I went to a really challenging lower school, middle school, high school, and I was always behind. I was diagnosed with ADHD and dyslexia, and I've like that was my label. Like that was me. And I wore that for a very long time, and I was so embarrassed. So I overcompensated, again, going back to being adaptable, with just being really sociable and just like being the life of the party and like whatever I could do so people wouldn't know that I wasn't smart enough. I think everyone was in geometry and I got held back in my math group, and there was like four of us, and we called it dumb people math. And everyone else was taking Spanish and Latin, and I was only allowed to take one language because I wasn't smart enough. And so that was my story. And anytime that I would be faced with a challenge that like challenged me academically, I just would shut down because I'm like, I can't handle that. I'm not smart enough. And I was like so embarrassed. And I remember, and I don't know if I've ever shared this out loud, but there, you know, there's the joke that everyone gets into ASU.
Yes.
Right. Right. So I didn't. And I was so ashamed of that. And I couldn't believe that I didn't, when it was like, they let everyone and their mom in. Luckily, I ended up getting in. I can't remember the process that we went through, but I ended up getting in, but I never told anyone that, you know, I never told them that I didn't get into college. And then it was time to rush for sororities. And I didn't know if I wanted to do it, but I was like, oh, why not? You know, like a bunch of my friends at U of A had did it and they were loving it. So I was like, I'll try it. And the sororities that I liked, it liked me. They couldn't accept me because of my GPA. And so that was another reinforcement of not feeling being smart enough. Yeah. And it was like, oh my gosh, like what is wrong with me? Like I just felt like I had a broken brain, honestly. And yeah, I just kind of like went through life thinking that. I ended up doing really well at ASU because I got into teaching. And you know, it's funny, fast forward, like I'm just a teacher. Like I love educating. I love learning something and then sharing that with someone else. And I ended up really excelling in that, which was awesome. But that was when I started to change my beliefs around it. But yeah, that stuck with me for a long time. But now what's interesting is if I have moments and I'm like, oops, I do it in a like loving, goofy way. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, Brittany, like I kind of do. I take a step back. I'm like, all right, like you got this, you know, like really just taking a step back and talking to myself like I would talk to younger Brittany. It's like I have to talk to that inner child, because that's the person that went through all of those years of school being told that she was dumb.
Right.
And I don't believe that about myself anymore. I am incredibly resourceful. I have a very high emotional intelligence, and I have way different types of skills than if I was academically book smart.
Yeah.
And so like I much rather have what I have now than like change that story back then. So that one is definitely the strongest belief that I carried for a long time. And it feels really good to be able to be like, that's not it anymore. And I always just pull the, I'm just resourceful. And I really am. Like I figure out everything, like yeah. Even just reinforcing starting a business. I remember at one point being like, I would never start a business. I could never do that. And then it's like, why not? Right. And so eventually it builds and it builds. And here I am, I'm figuring out all of these things that if I wasn't smart enough, there would be no freaking way that I could have a podcast, could be running a business, like wanting, you know, building a team, training a team. Like there's just no way if I wasn't smart enough. So it's like, all right, well, here we are.
That's so good. And it's so interesting, right? I think everybody has some variation of that where they have this thought that maybe started when they were young, and they carry it around like this suitcase. And then these experiences happen throughout their life. And they're like, yep, there's evidence. See, that's why I carry this suitcase. And they put it in the suitcase and they just keep carrying it thing to thing. And then something doesn't work out. And they're like, yeah, because of this suitcase that I have of the reason that I can't do this thing, you know? And I just think, it's so interesting when you flip that and start looking for evidence of the opposite. Like there's probably lots of ways that you did prove that you were smart enough along the way earlier on in life that you just weren't acknowledging or couldn't see at the time, you know, until you started allowing yourself to see that. Yeah. I agree. I think language is super powerful. And when I was nutrition coaching, you know, talking about weakness versus area of opportunity was something that I talked about with my clients a lot, or, you know, I wish I could do this versus like, this isn't a priority to me and getting really granular about the things that we say and why we choose to say them, I think is so important.
Yeah, definitely.
What are some ways that you, to bring it back to self-love, like we were talking about earlier, what are some of the ways that you encourage your clients to start practicing self-love?
So some of the ways, I mean, it really comes down to when you think about lifestyle and just wellness in general, it's like you really do have to love yourself enough to make the choices. So for me, in my experience, it was Whole 30 that really was that moment of, whoa, like I'm eating super clean. And by eating super clean, my thoughts are super clean. And it was just that, oh, maybe there's something to this. Like everybody knows like you eat healthy, but we don't really know why it's so important. Like for me, it was very cosmetic. Like I just wanted to be lean and I like, you know, had gained a lot of weight from eating and drinking and I wanted to lose the weight. And sure, that might've happened, but that like wasn't even like, that was such a small scope of how good I felt mentally and how clear I felt mentally. So that's the first place that I like to start with clients, is just looking at what their lifestyle is like. What are they consuming on a regular basis if we're really focusing on the self-love? Because what I've, the pattern that I've noticed, and this is almost across the board, is, you know, the like diet, the food that people are eating are not really nourishing. It's a lot of like on the go type of food. It's not really like taking the time to make food at home. And even if you don't like cooking at home, there is, you know, the, as cheesy as this sounds, I'm a cheesy person. The ingredient that you use is love. Like when you make food for yourself or someone else, like there's love that puts into that. So, you know, kind of looking at that. And then the other common theme is just phone usage and social media. Is there's like a really negative relationship with social media and comparison. That's a big one that I've noticed, is the compare and despair game that goes on that has people kind of in a place of not feeling good enough and not loving themselves because they're seeing a highlight of what someone else is doing. And they're like, oh, should I be doing that? And it couldn't be further from what they should be doing in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's such a powerful point, that there's a strong connection between the consumption of processed food, of sugar, of food that's prepackaged, that, you know, on your phone, on social media, and how you feel about yourself, how you are feeling in your life overall. I would imagine that there is a very direct correlation there. That's really interesting. So what are some of the steps that people can start doing either after listening to this podcast or maybe like as they're thinking about working with somebody like yourself to start getting a better relationship? Like, do you recommend Whole30 to a lot of people? Do you do like social media detoxes? What are kind of like the first couple steps that someone's like, yeah, maybe I am over consuming things that aren't supporting my health or what are kind of the first things?
Yeah, definitely. Depending, like sometimes we get down into it. The first thing that I like to do is establish a morning and evening routine. And that's just kind of across the board for all human beings, is when we were kids, we thrived off of a schedule. Like we had a very structured schedule, and then we go to college and it messes everything up. And then we become adults, kind of. Are we adults yet? I don't know. But then we become adults and everything has gone to shit. Like, you know, it's like this 9-to-5 job. Like you're just like, you wake up and you just go, you know, that's very much a kind of scramble. And, I like to, the morning and evening routine are boundaries in the day, because I mean, no one really has control over what happens in their day. Like, you get an email, you get a text message, you know, something happens, your water heater breaks, like you all of a sudden have all these things going on. So the morning and the evening are the only hours that we have complete control over, really. Like, if you're living a privileged life and, like, in, you know, you have a job and a family or like whatever you have going on, is there so many moving parts. But in those moments before you go to bed and how you wake up, it just sets you up for your whole entire day and it gives you more space in your day. So I always say that the nighttime sets up for the morning routine and then the morning routine sets you up for your day. So it builds this nice little flow throughout your day. So at night, I like to look at just like what people are doing and then making one or two small adjustments. But I have a couple non-negotiables. Like, I don't tell anyone like you have to do this, but I do have some non-negotiables, and that includes no technology at least an hour before bed. And whether or not they do it, it's on them. But if they're not getting results, like, well, it could be worth trying. I don't know. But I mean, there's a lot of reasons behind that. I mean, one of the main ones is when you're looking at a blue screen, even if you're using blue blockers or whatever it is, you're being stimulated by technology, melatonin decreases. And that's the sleepy hormone. So that's what puts you to sleep. So if you're on your phone right before bed, which homegirl was very guilty about doing this for a long time, I'd be on my computer, I'd be on my phone, going to bed at midnight, waking up at 5 a.m., just completely, my whole rhythm was off. And as soon as I started making those adjustments in my life, I realized, oh, this is something that I can translate to my clients. So we look at what they want to do before bed. And sometimes that includes, you know, no technology. So our phones have an amazing feature that you can actually power down and you can go into settings and you can choose your downtime and it grays out all of your apps, which is just a trigger reminder of like, hey, what do you really want to pay attention to right now?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the baseline. But then from there, it's like you kind of get to choose. Some people like to prep for their day. So they lay out their clothes the night before or like make a meal for the next day, their breakfast, their lunch. Other people like to journal. Some like to watch TV, which I'm like all for. But this earlier you can watch your television show, the better it is before bed. Because again, you're not getting stimulated before bed. Some people like to read. So it just depends on the person of what they want. And then also if they have a partner, that's a totally different ball game because you do want to be on the same page. But even if it's just an hour of quality time with your significant other, like that is so much better than just sitting and scrolling and looking into other people's life. It's like, you got a whole beautiful life right in front of you. Why not take this last hour of your day to turn this off? So for me, and these are baby steps. Like it took me a while to get here. I charge my phone out of my room. It charges in my kitchen, and I sometimes don't look at it until 7 a.m. If I need something, I use my computer for it. But that way, it kind of gives that little buffer in my day. But I do suggest that for my clients. And then in the morning, depending on if they're a morning person or not, it just requires getting up a little bit earlier. So if someone's waking up right now at 7:30 and they have to be out the door by 8 o'clock, 8:15 at the latest, there's really not a lot of time. It's like, wake up, get dressed, do the whole thing, rush out the door. And that creates a very reactive type of day. So it just feels like you're constantly trying to catch up with the day instead of getting ahead of it. So I always say, I'm like, hey, if you're getting up at 7:30 right now, this week, just get up at 7:20, 10 minutes earlier. That 10 minutes can make all the difference in your day. Even if it's just to wake up and just sit up straight and breathe, that time of not being reactive. And if you set yourself up the night before with your clothes and your food, you don't have to think about what's next. That's the beautiful part. You can just get dressed, get your food, and then maybe spend the 5 minutes that you created for yourself setting an intention for the day, asking yourself, what's going to make today a win? So that is definitely within like building on these skills. That's where I always start is the morning and evening routine.
Yeah, that's all such good advice. And the things I love about what you said, or the thing that I love about the things that you said, is that they're all free and like anybody can try them, you know? And I think mm-hmm. that we often write off the really easy, you know, seemingly easy, the things that are free, the things that seem too simple to work as too simple to work. And it's like, yeah, but why don't you try it and then see, you know?
Totally. I mean, that's the thing. Like, none of this is groundbreaking. Like, I did not come up with this at all, obviously. Like, there's a reason why it's being repeated by every single person is because it works. And it's easy to write it off because it's like, oh, it's just that, yeah, sure, that's so simple. But like, are you really doing it? Like, are you still feeling shitty in your day? It's like, well, maybe just, you never know, like it doesn't hurt to try it. I found that some clients are more drawn to their morning or their evening routine. Like it doesn't all happen at once and that's okay. It's a process and it's a lot of unlearning habits that you have to do before you can really step into these other habits in the morning and the evening. But there isn't a single person that I have worked with directly or indirectly that hasn't implemented some sort of morning routine that hasn't felt the benefit from it. I know personally, if my morning routine is off, my whole day is off. Like it's just that I am constantly playing catch up. And that's when the negative thoughts start to seep in. Like that's when the self-talk comes in. And I have the tools and the awareness to be like, hey, you know, it's okay. But if you don't have the tools, it can be exhausting. And then by the end of the day, you're just totally wiped. And all you want to do is sit on the couch, order food, and watch Netflix. And right. then it creates that cycle again. So it's like, just break that pattern, be proactive, and then like, just enjoy your life. Like we only have one life. Like I think a lot of us, myself included, sometimes live like we have two lives and we don't. Like this is it.
That's so good. So you talked about getting up a little bit earlier. What are some of the things that you recommend for clients or that you've done that have been powerful to use that time for?
So for me, I meditate. And that's my non-negotiable, whether I'm traveling or if I'm home. I wake up, I drink water because we get super dehydrated, and I sit on my couch the same spot every single day and I meditate. And then I pull out my journal, I look at what my day is. I teach early mornings, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So that's like my routine. Meditate, water, meditate, look at my journal. I look at my big three things that I have to focus on in the day, and then my day begins. And that's just like all that I need. In that journal, I write my gratitudes and whatever else is on my mind. But I meditate for 20 minutes, so that is a long period of time, but it progressively got there. It started with 5 and then it worked to 10. But really, my morning routine takes 25 minutes tops, maybe 30. So that's for me. But what other people do is, you know, the journal, the gratitude. Some people like to do stretches. I think moving your body is really powerful first thing in the morning. And some people like to do a cold shower. I also like to just like turn the water, like I'll take a warm shower and then turn the water cold for 60 seconds. And it just jolts and wakes up my nervous system. But I do think it's not a one size fits all. You just find something that works for you and then just do it consistently. That's one of the things that I've noticed is someone tries something once, like, I meditated once and I couldn't turn off my brain, so it doesn't work. And I'm like, okay, like you can't just eat a carrot and be like, all right, I'm healthy. Like it doesn't work like that. Like it takes at least a year. Like it really takes at least a year to really fully understand the benefits. You can start to notice a difference, like a little bit, especially with being more proactive in your day instead of reactive. But I would definitely say, it takes a while, and it doesn't have to be perfect either. That's another thing, is consistency, but it can be flexible too. I love the mentality. I know we both love James Clear and we like geek out over Atomic Habits, but his never miss twice mentality is like the most amazing, simple thing tool to use. It's like, if you're trying to build a new habit, if you miss it a day, it's okay. just set yourself up so you can do it the next day. If you miss twice, then you have to start the habit over again. But if you only miss once, it's no big deal. We're humans. It's not supposed to be perfect. There's going to be days that you don't. Like yesterday, I drove home from Telluride with my mom and I didn't have a chance to meditate because I wanted to get on the road. I could have gotten up earlier, but I didn't. And I was okay with that. And this morning I set myself up, that alarm went off. You bet your butt I was sitting in that little chair and I meditated first thing this morning. So it's okay if it's not perfect. And it's just, you kind of have to work with what you got.
Totally. And I think reflection is so powerful. Like you said, I think a lot of times when we want to do something or we have intentions to do something and it doesn't go well, then we're like, oh, you know, there's that evidence again that I can't stick to something. It's like, yeah, but what could you do different tomorrow to make sure that happens? You know, that used to come up a lot with my clients is when something would, you know, quote unquote slip or fall off track. It's like, I'm not so worried about you falling off track. I'm worried about what you're going to do different tomorrow so that you don't quote unquote fall off track again. You know, but instead I think it's, and it's not fun like to look at that and be like, okay, what could I have done different? Yeah, I could have gotten up earlier. Okay, tomorrow I'm going to get up earlier. Like there's an element of taking responsibility and ownership over that, that I think always feels super comfortable. It's really nice to like write it off and be like, well, I had to get in the car and it is what it is. And like just kind of throw it away.
Right.
And so owning that and saying, okay, what could I have done different? I think is super powerful.
Yeah, it really is. It's like, you know, you never really fall off track because all you have to do is just get back on it. Like, you know, we know what to do. And sometimes it's just, okay, asking yourself what's not working, what could be working, what's the next best step? And you know, like that can lead you back on track. Or it's like, okay, this isn't working for me. This morning routine, I can't get up 10 minutes earlier. So this isn't working. What can I do a little bit differently to set myself up for the day? So yeah, I agree. It's like, yeah, it's just, you pick yourself back up. It doesn't have to be. The thing about all of this is it is so simple and we just overcomplicate it. Just because it's simple doesn't mean it's easy, but it really is such a simple process. We just overcomplicate it in our minds.
Totally. Well, before I get into my last few questions, I do want to ask you what you believe the power of gratitude is, because you've brought that up a couple times, and I know that we are pretty aligned on thinking that's a really important component of a healthy lifestyle. So kind of in your words, your thought process, or how you explain it to clients, what is the power of doing some kind of practice that cultivates gratitude?
So gratitude for me is a really, it's just a strong practice to have on a regular basis, because gratitude turns not enough into more than enough. It helps shift from scarcity into abundance. And when you can focus on gratitude, you can just see all the blessings that are surrounding us at all times. Like just, and you can go down. I mean, I could go down a whole entire, I call it a gratitude rabbit hole. Like my water bottle, I'm so grateful to have clean, ice cold water. And then I'm like, oh, I'm so grateful that it's kept cold all day. And then I'm so grateful for Hydro Flask for making it, you know, like you could literally spiral into, and it just creates this. I mean, I'd like to believe, I know there's so much science behind it, but like it creates the happy feel good hormones that are released. And you start to just see the world through a different lens. And gratitude has gotten me through some really, really, really dark, hard times. And I think when it's hard to remain upbeat and positive and happy all the time, I just fall into gratitude. And like, that's kind of my net that keeps me from sinking down to a really dark negative level.
Absolutely. I think it's, I heard someone say one time that you can't be anxious and grateful at the same time. And I like to think that there's not many negative feelings that you can have while simultaneously being grateful. And there's been lots of times in my life where something's happened and I've thought, oh, I don't have time for this, or this is frustrating or whatever. And I will like out loud start making myself count gratitude, count blessings. Because it's a really quick and attainable way to pull yourself out of negative feelings. And that doesn't mean that you don't acknowledge negative feelings and that sometimes those have a place, but especially for some of those little annoyances like traffic or things that like we tend to get caught up in that we really don't want to be shaping our lives, I think gratitude is a great practice for that.
I agree 100%. It's just, it's such an anchor Yeah. Because it's like, it's like, oh, I have to do this. It's like, no, I get to do this. I'm grateful. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm grateful I have a car, and I'm grateful I have, you know, and it feels, I guess, sometimes like, oh, like, I don't want to say fluffy, but I do feel like there's a little bit of a stigma with it, which it's fine. You don't know what you're missing out on if you're not practicing it, but it really does truly work. Even through some really terrible experiences, I wouldn't change any of them. Like, I feel a deep sense of gratitude for the experiences that I've had, because it's shaped me into who I am. And I don't think in the past I would have ever thought that. I don't think I would have been like, oh, I'm so grateful this happened to me. And now I can like genuinely say from a place of love, like for myself, is like, I'm so grateful that I went through that experience, because I would definitely not be doing what I'm doing without that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, shifting forward, what are you most excited about right now?
Oh my gosh. Well, I am an excited human being. I mean, on the Enneagram, I'm a 7, I'm an enthusiastic visionary. So I have a lot of visions for the future. And I'm very excited because I'm growing and expanding, and I am starting to put together my own like coaching collective. And I know we've talked about this before, and that's just such a passion of mine, is like teaching what I know and bringing on other coaches that have different niches or specialty in their area, but I get to share my method with them. So I'm very excited about that. Like, that's just like is what has me light up every single day, just the possibility that it creates to be able to create more of a positive impact on more people. So that's really exciting. And then just, I mean, life in general, like I'm just excited. I'm just excited to be here, quite honestly. It's just every day is such a blessing. And even the challenges that come up every day, and especially running a business, it challenges me in ways that I never thought that I was going to be challenged in. So it's just, and those moments of like frustration or overwhelm, I take that to step back to just be like, you know what though? Like, I wouldn't change it for the world. I'm just so grateful and excited and happy to be on this earth doing what I'm doing.
That's amazing. So, so good. Where can people connect with you online to learn more about your coaching program or to listen to your podcast?
So my website's just brittanyking.com, but I spell my name a little funky thanks to my mom. It's brittanyking.com. And my podcast is Positively Real. And you can search that, or you can search my name. I'm on the gram, same thing, brittanyking_. And yeah, I think those are all of the places that I'm at.
And yeah. What's the thought behind naming the podcast Positively Real?
So for a very long time, I was a little bit embarrassed about my positivity. Like, I would often try to dim it or downplay it. And because I know that people find positive people like inauthentic or annoying. And I, again, wanted to fit in, and I wanted people to like me. So I wouldn't really own that about myself. And when I was working with a group trying to come up with, you know, when I decided I was going to do a podcast, I also wanted to throw up, because that would mean using my voice. And I was very afraid to use my voice for so long because of fear of being found out, because I felt like an imposter. And I think a part of that was the belief that I had about myself. But when we were kind of going back and forth about it, someone had said, they're like, you're like this is you, like you are this person, like you're just like authentically you, and like this is, you're real. And I was like, oh. And when they said that, they're like, yeah, it's like Positively Real. And I was like, oh, okay. So like, I really started to own that, like being positive is a superpower. And Marie Forleo, who is like my like fairy godmother of personal development, that I just so inspired by her. When I took her B-School last year, she had talked about how positivity was her superpower. And it was the first time that I had heard someone else say that. And it really stuck with me. And I was like, wow, I guess it is a superpower. And I should own that. And not that I should, I want to own that. So I just want people to know that like you can be positive and go through really hard times, but be able to find a silver lining to any situation. When I first started dating Brian, after our first date, he nicknamed me Silver Lining. And he's texting me, he was like, "Hey, SLP." And I was like, "What's that?" He's like, "Silver Lining Playbook." And I was like, "Why?" He's like, "You had something positive for every negative thing I had to say last night." And I was like, "Oh my God." So it just kind of snowballed into this. It's true. Like even in the darkest times, even if you don't see it right away, like it'll help you find the silver lining. It may not be today, it may not be tomorrow, but I'll help you get there one day. And so that's kind of just where the foundation of where that came from.
I love it. That's so good. Yeah. Lastly, what do you believe are the ingredients of a fulfilling life?
The ingredients of a fulfilling life, two parts. One is just being yourself, like owning who you are and just loving every piece of you. But then the other part is serving others. Like I truly believe that if you want to feel fulfilled, if you make life not about you and focus on people that maybe need or more need than you are, it really does fill you up. So I would definitely say being yourself and serving others and having fun, like just having fun with it. Like life is not meant to be so serious all the time.
So good. So good. Brittany, thank you so much for being here. It is always a pleasure to chat with you and you have such good wisdom and advice and you make it really seem very simple. And I think that that's what we need. So thank you for sharing your knowledge and your time. This was great.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me on the show. I love everything that you're doing. And you are one of the people that I admire and look up to and everything that you do, it's like always creates a new possibility for me. So keep doing what you're doing. Cause I really, truly, genuinely, like it inspires me so much.
Thank you. So
thank you. You're welcome.
Hey guys, before you go, I just want to mention a few quick things. First, if you loved this episode, please share it with a friend. Just shoot them a message with the link, which you can do right from your podcast app. Or I would love it if you post a screenshot of this episode to your social media or your Instagram story, and then just make sure you tag me at Hey Presley so I definitely see it and can thank you. And if you haven't yet, please do subscribe to the show so you don't miss upcoming episodes. As always, any references, tools, or links mentioned in this episode are right there in the show notes for your convenience. And if you have any questions for me, suggestions for the show, anything like that, shoot me a message on Instagram, again, at Hey Presley, or at podcast@heypresley.com. Thank you so much for listening, and make it a great day.